We want to take just a second to thank our sponsors who make this show possible. Super Lime Plus, an all-natural liquid lime that goes to work immediately to raise the pH of your soil for better hay and crop production with less weeds. And Indian Mountain ATV Park, located 11620 County Road 8, Piedmont, Alabama. You can find links to all these companies in the show notes.
Me and my brother, he was about 14. He traded up an old Ford 50-something model pickup truck. And this pickup had more Bondo and rust in it than it had metal. And then we'd pull up the gas station. We'd always say, check the gas, fill it up with oil. And that thing smoked like a tar kill. It just smoked. I mean, it looked like it was a crop duster coming down the road. And we're just traveling down the road. And one day, and all at once, there went a wheel out through there. I said, Darryl, I said, look at that wheel. By the time I said it, the truck hit the ground. And so when it hit the ground, there's sparks flying 10, 15, 20 feet high, and we lost control of the truck. Well, my daddy was traveling behind us in his 79 red Ford pickup. And every time he'd go around, I'd wave at him as I went by.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Hayden Outbound Podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Daniel.
We're going to have a little storytelling.
Sounds good to me.
Daniel and I talked, that's probably been about a month ago. We've been trying to get you on here to tell your stories. And Shane and I were driving to Georgia, and you shared one with us. And I said, well, I think we need to have him on. So I've been looking forward to this. And Brandon, been trying to get you on the show for a little while now. So excited to have you here. So welcome to you both. And Daniel, you fire us off with a story.
Yeah, I got a story to tell. It's a story about when, nobody likes going to a dentist. Nobody likes going to a dentist. Matter of fact, I had to go Monday. But I went to a dentist probably 30 years ago. About 30 years ago. And I remember going into this room, and this room was really, really, really small. You know, you got the chair, you got the lighting coming over. And I thought, when I sit down in a chair, my feet touch the wall. And when the feet touch the wall, I was kind of like, this could be problems, you know. Well, anyway, the nurse came in, and when she came in, she set the plate there, and she put her utensils there. And this problem with this lady was she's a little bit too big for this room. So I'm sitting her on my back like this, and then all at once, she was moving things around, adjusting things, moving things, and all at once I heard that plate hit the floor. But anyway, I saw this big green thing come to me, looked like a big moon, hit me in the side of the head because she was too big for the room. It slung me around, and then when I hit the wall over here, the sheetrock wall, my head got impressed into the wall. And when out then, I was out. Well, she was trying to get me out. Well, my head got hung in there, and there was where the wire come and got my head hung in it, so she couldn't get me out. So she had to call the dentist, and when the dentist came around, they had to get me out. And then when they got me out, they kind of shook me and they woke me up. And I still remember her saying, well, are you okay? And I was spitting sheetrock out of my mouth, and then and I was just laying there like this. And the doctor finally come in, and he said, she's too big for this room, ain't she? And that's what the end of the story right there.
Good grief. Had you had any anesthesia before
No.
that? Or you were just
yeah
unaffected, no medication? No. She hit you so hard with her rear end that it knocked you out and into the sheetrock wall.
Well, no, the sheetrock wall is what knocked me out. And the thing about it was, they didn't do no dental work that day. They sent me home. I had a concussion. But the problem was, they said they kept trying to get me out, or she trying to get me out. And all she could say is, I'm sorry.
You were knocked out cold.
Cold as a tater in the sheetrock wall.
Did you go back?
Yeah, I had to go back.
I think I'd have found me another
dentist. Yeah, me too. Yeah, but I went definitely back. He's the only dentist we had around that area, but she wasn't there anymore. I hated that, you know, but that's the way life is. So, but anyway.
I'm going to get the name of that dentist when we're done here to make sure that I stay
good
away over there.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Now, you have another story about sheetrock.
Yeah, yeah. You mean tell that one?
Yeah, man, tell it.
Well, when I was growing up in, of course, Alabama, in our home, we had, we had shotguns on the gun racks in every room, pretty much. But what the problem was with these shotguns in the gun rack was we like to jump on the bed. And when I jumped on the bed, my daddy caught me. He was a preacher too. And he told me, he said, boy, if I catch you jumping on that that bed one more time, I'm going to wear you out, me and my brother. And I'm going to mention his name, Daryl. But anyway, he left to go somewhere, and we started jumping on the bed back and forth, back and forth. And all at once, the headboard started hitting the wall. Well, when that 12-gauge Belgium-made gun fell out of the Browning, fell out of the gun rack and stuck barrel first in the wall because we was making too much movement in the room. So me and Daryl looked down and said, we're going to die. Daddy's going to kill both of us. Because back in them days, you know, they'd say, you know, spoil the child, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child. Well, we sat there and thought about it. I think I was 5. He might have been 9. And we looked at that and said, what are we going to do? So we went and we pulled the shotgun out and we wiped all the fingerprints off and put it back in the gun rack. And when we put it back in the gun rack, we went in the kitchen. We made some, got some cornmeal and flour, and we made a paste. And when we made a paste, we come back and we covered that wall up, that little hole where that shotgun went. And we thought, wow, we got away with it. Well, what happened was after that, it become bird season. My daddy went and got the shotgun off the gun rack, got into 79 Ford pickup truck, and him and my uncles went bird hunting. And boy, my dad was a good shot. He could shoot a shotgun. And then all once the dogs pointed, and of course my daddy went up and kicked where the bird was, and the bird flew up, and he rolled that shotgun around, that brown and Belgian made, German made shotgun, made, and he pulled the trigger, and when he did, a puff of white smoke will come out of the barrel. I forgot to clean the barrel out. So anyway, finally I heard that old 79 Ford pickup come pulling up and driving. I thought, well, we got quail deep. So anyway, I run the door and I open it up and there's Daddy standing there and he's covered from head to toe. He looked like Casper the Ghost. He said, how did Sheetrock get in the barrel? I said, ask Darrell. I took off running. Needless to say, I got a whipping that night. But anyway, that's your sim will always find you out.
Ain't it the truth?
Yes.
That's true.
Now, Brandon, you a man of hunting, fishing. We've told so many stories. Actually, you allowed me to kill my first deer, only deer, of the 2024 hunting season.
Right.
You got a story, something about hunting for us?
Well, this one's kind of goes back. So we had talked a little bit, me and you. I had started laying around the house thinking about things. And so I got to thinking, well, what's some funny stuff that happened growing up? So my wife was talking. I told her, she said, you need to tell Philip that one. So all I said, right. Okay. So I said, I'll tell him. So I turned 16. My dad had, at this time of year, snakes start getting out, and that's a thing. So deer season had passed, and he said, hey, we got to go to Pickens County and do a work day. I said, yes, sir. At that time, girls became a thing, you're dating. I said, can she go? He said, if her parents are okay with it. I said, I don't mind. I said, all right. So friends we went to school with, their parents were in the same club we were in down there. So we go down there, and it's just a big family thing. We're doing our thing. Well, I'm 16. I got a truck for the first time, Hey, we're going to go riding. That's fine, long as somebody else goes with y'all. So here we all go riding. We're doing well. It gets sunny. You know what's in roads usually in the sunshine? Snakes start getting out, right? So I go around the corner. There's a friend of mine there. Now he's a big guy, manly guy. Nothing scares him. But I knew his weakness. His weakness was a snake. So I made the comment. I said, I got him today. Snakes is one of my favorite things. Coon hunting, fishing, wherever you're at. If I see one, I'm interested, right? So this 5-foot chicken snake's laying out in the road, sunning. I pull up there, my cousin and me, and I grabbed the snake, got it in my hand. I said, how you drive? He said, I can't drive a 5-speed. I said, well, hold the snake. He says, that ain't happening either. He said, so what are you finna do? I said, well, you finna learn to drive 5-speed. Worst thing can happen is you kill it. It just jump. So he gets it going, and we look like a bucking bull as he gets it going. And the truck gets it going, and we Cadillacing back. Well, everybody knows I got this 5-foot chicken snake in the front seat with me in a single cab little S10 truck. And I'm holding it. Well, this snake just keeps uncoiling from around my arm. It gets around the gear shifter. Well, if you know anything about snakes, they got just as much power to pull from you. So I thought, no big deal. Well, all of a sudden, we pull in the yard and I'm fixing to go get him with this snake because I'm finna get him, And he's snake gets out of my hand in the tube of my truck. Well, my cousin piles out. He slams the door. So the snake has nowhere to go. So it goes up in the heat vent in the floor. Snake's gone. There's 5 foot of snake inside of a little S10 truck. I said, no big deal. So my uncle walks out and he says, you look like you got a problem. I said, we got a pretty good problem. My dad's going to kill me if he finds out what I just did, because he's got to ride in this truck with us back. So a few minutes go by. My dad comes outside and I'm just keeping quiet. And he says, hey, I'm going to ride home with Papa. Come straight home when you leave here. Follow your uncle back. You got it? Yes, sir. No problem. We're clean. You know, he no problem from him. So a few minutes go by. I said, what are we going to do? He says, well, my uncle says, we got to get that snake out. He said, you don't like cold. Just turn the AC on. Freeze the truck out. It's going to go out through those vents that get out. We left that truck and finished what we were doing for an hour. Go back to the truck. There's no snake in there. Windows are fogged up because it's, you know, how it is. It's cold. I said, well, let's go. If I said again, snakes don't bother. Not scared of that. So the girl at the time knew nothing about any of this. So me, her, and my cousin are in the front seat. We're not talking about this. We're just riding. So we're going down the road. And she looks down and she goes, and she just freaks out in the truck. Well, it has a side and back glass. We're in on Highway 82 coming out of Pickens County, and a 16-year-old girl goes out the back glass into the back of the truck running over 50 mile an hour. And I'm swerving because I'm trying to grab snake, can't get snake. My uncle comes flying up behind us, and he's like, let me guess, it got out. He said, yeah, everybody else get in the car, in the truck. My aunt's driving that truck, said, I'm riding with you. So we're driving up the road. And I got shorts on and flip-flops because I've changed out all of our work clothes from work. And we're going down the road, and he looks down. And he goes, hey, he's by your feet, coming back down by the clutch. Let him come down. I said, ain't no problem. He said, you know he's fixing to bite you, right? He said, I was like, are you serious? Now all of a sudden I become scared of snakes. And I was like, he goes, it's just going to hurt for a minute, but he's got to hang on to you so I can get hold on to him. I was like... I just sat over. I said, okay, so we're driving on the road a little piece. And he says, when I tell you to, slam your left foot down. And I stomp it. Well, you know where I've stomped the snake? Dead center of the body. So there's 2.5 foot of snake that's ready to react. And he eat my ankles up. And my uncle reaches over and gets him. No hesitation, thought, my window's down, pulls this 5 foot of snake out from under the vents and just chunks him across Highway 82 on oncoming traffic. And that was, needless to say, that was the end of her. And that didn't happen no more. So
yeah.
She didn't. She's hanging around. Won't date you no more. Oh. Then she won't go back to the hunting.
I was an idiot.
I bet. I didn't know you were a snake handler.
Oh yeah, he's from West Virginia.
Oh my goodness. I don't know the little girl that was sitting shotgun that day, but she and I have a lot in common.
Me too.
That's exactly where I'd have went. Is out of your truck some way or another.
Just as fast as she got out was the most interesting part. That she, in one motion, flicked the lever, slide over at 50 mile an hour, goes through the back glass backwards. There's no way of turning around. She just, and she's gone.
When you want to do something, your mind will turn on and give it 100% and figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
It's going where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
To go off of that one, just Candace, my wife, she does not like frogs or snakes. There's two things she just... As far as she's, Lord, the good Lord should have never made those two things. Mm-hmm. You know, she's fine with that. So pranks are a big thing in our house. Me and you've talked a lot about mm-hmm. how we are, and y'all are, you know, picking and playing. And I told Candace one day, I was like, I'm going to get you with some of these frogs. And so it just dating, you know, I'd throw a frog at her. She don't like it. Well, Kyson knew about this. So there's times that he was younger and he come in. I said, I got a frog. I said, what are you going to do with that frog? Mama's in the bathtub. Gonna die. That's all I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It's just gonna be me, you, and your sister. I mean, me, your mom, and your sister. You're not gonna be here no more when your mama goes in there. So he goes in there, lays down the floor, and as pretty as you ever seen a kid, push that frog's nose under the cut of the door, and he pokes it in the rear end, and that frog goes in the bathroom. And you know where it lands, on the rug beside her in her bathroom. Yeah. Because that's all broke loose there. His mama comes out of the tub the way she came in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she was trying to kill him. And then I caught the wrath of that when she got herself where it needed to be, you know. So about a year later, he gets crazy again. I said, come in the house.
we have little ringneck snakes at our house where little stump holes have been.
Yeah.
And those are just little snake about yay big. And I'll catch them, and he'll coat them, and he'll put them in a little turtle tank.
Right.
They'll last about a day, and then we'll go turn them loose, right? So Kyson does this. Time goes on, goes on, goes on. I seen the wheels turning. Mama's taking a bath again.
Mm.
He comes in there. I looked at him. I said, I'm going to save you your death. The frog's one thing, but if you push that snake under that door, your mother's going to kill you.
Yeah.
That's point blank. And I've seen him go in there, and he laid in the floor, and he had that snake by the tail end, and them snakes hanging. You know, a snake about 12 inches long, and he puts it on the door, and he just looks at me. I'm just going, no, don't. He pulls it back out. He lays that snake again. That old snake tries, and she just ain't seeing it. And he looked at me, and he said, I'll do it another day. I was like, best decision you ever made in your life. Let's just go turn that snake loose and forget that ever happened, you know, so.
I know Candace. It's a good decision he didn't do it.
She'll hurt you.
Yeah. Yeah, she got a pocket knife.
Mm-hmm. Are you in trouble? Well, we hope you're not. But just in case you are, we know a good lawyer. Whitney Island here in Hayden, Alabama has law services. Or maybe if you're not from Hayden, I'm sure she'd be happy to hear from you. So check her out at islandlaw.com. We appreciate Whitney and her sponsoring the show.
Take us somewhere else then.
Well, I got a story about church. I was up in Illinois and we were having cowboy church. And I don't know if you know what cowboy church is. It's where a bunch of people comes together and there's about 18 performers and they sing songs and perform songs. They're in groups or special singers and all that. Well, the church always packed. And I'm the DJ. I'm the moderator. I'm the one that oversees it. Well, I was praying for God to show up in that church service and make a difference. I wanted a spiritual-led service. I'm not, you know, Pentecostal, but I am. I do like to have a good time in the house of the Lord, you know. The church filled up front to back to front. We brought chairs out. It was packed. Only place to sit was on the far right side. And in this church, they had them old bench pews. They were wood, no padding at all, no padding. So I had to sit on the far side. Well, the bad part on the far side, there's a crack. So I sat there on the far side on that old bench pew. And guess what? I sat down. Well, that old crack spread out. And then this woman come and sat beside me that, I did know her, but I met her in the past, and she was a little bit heavier than I was. And she got all led, she jumped up, woo, and when she jumped up, well, that crack closed on my butt cheek. So I jumped up, because I ripped my britches. So I'm like, oh, gosh. So I go to the bathroom, and they're like, what's going on? The bad thing about the bathroom, it goes right here, and here is the sanctuary. And in my haste, I opened the door, went in, and then I shut the door behind me, and it's supposed to be a pull lock. You pull it, and it locks. Well, I thought I pulled it, but I didn't. So I've been, and there's a mirror right here facing the sanctuary. So I've been over, dropped my britches, and looking in the mirror, well, what happened? Somebody opened the door, and the whole sanctuary saw my backside. And they laughed and they laughed and they laughed. And I did have a blood blister about that long on my back sack. So every time they see me, they said, you've been sitting on a crack lately?
Oh, man.
So that was a funny story, I thought. But that happened to me. And there's plenty of other stories. Can I have time to tell another one?
Absolutely.
We had another one time. We were in South Alabama. I was doing revival. And I was preaching. And we had this guy in our church, we'd always pray. He was our associate pastor. He'd follow me down there. And I always prayed for him to have the hand of the Lord on him to be more spiritual led. Because he was dry, 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 dry as a tennis ball. I mean, dry. Well, I was up there preaching. I was up preaching in South Alabama. And it was the middle of the summer. And the air conditioner went out. Well, what they did was they turned the ceiling fan on, and when they turned the ceiling fan on, they lowered the windows. Well, coming out of that bottom, them big old skeeters, you know what a big old skeeter is, out South Alabama, they come in, some kind of flies come in, and they come up, and they were hitting them ceiling fans, and they were just darting down in the crowd. Well, this one lady, she was a Pentecostal descent. She come walking in, and she sat down. She had one of the beehive hair dudes about like that. And it landed in her hair where her husband just slapped it, whoom, and it fell over, and I'm just dying laughing. And then all at once, one of them horse flies come down and landed in, well, I can't say his name. Well, I can. Brother Danny, and under his glasses, and he reached down and stood and pulled his glasses off. He pushed it up, and it started eating his eyeball. And then he started running around the church. And I said, thank you, Lord, for a horse fly and a skeeter, because he got lit up pretty good. His old eye swelled up. And I said, that's the answer of God's prayer right there, for you to be lit up by a horse fly.
They were motivated in that service that day.
Yeah. They were. Them old horse fly would dart down. That's a good story. I like that story.
Now, I tell you one thing, down in South Alabama, especially in Gulf Shores, I didn't know this until we had a place down there for a little while. They have yellow flies.
Yeah.
You familiar?
Yeah, I do. I don't know.
All I know is glory to God that they stay down there and they ain't up here. Those things will eat a plug.
Yeah, they will.
Daniel, when we were talking about the stories that you had, you mentioned you have a brother, and y'all had a story about a truck one time.
Me and my brother, he was about 14. He traded up an old Ford 50-something model pickup truck. And this pickup had more Bondo and rust in it than it had metal. And then we'd pull up the gas station. We'd always say, check the gas, fill it up with oil. And that thing smoked like a tar kill. It just smoked. I mean, it looked like it was a crop duster coming down the road. And we're just traveling down the road, and one day, and all at once, there went a wheel out through there. I said, Darryl, look at that wheel. By the time I said it, the truck hit the ground. And so when it hit the ground, there's sparks flying 10, 15, 20 feet high, and we lost control of the truck. Well, my daddy was traveling behind us in his 79 red Ford pickup. And every time he'd go around, I'd wave at him as I went by, like every all three times. Finally, we lost control of it, and just so happened over here at a grocery store where they serve gas, there was a truck there that was carrying gas. Well, it was filling up the tanks so they could sell gas. But when we lost control of it, it was parked there, and our truck hit the back wheel axle of that semi full of gas, and we stopped. And when we stopped, my daddy ran up there, and he opened the door, of course, the five-gallon buckets that we'd been sitting on, because we didn't have a bench seat, nowhere in it, didn't have a seat belt, didn't have nothing, but we sitting on five-gallon bucket. It fell out into the parking lot, and daddy grabbed me out, hugged me, crying. Well, about that time, here comes a cop pulling up, and he gets out of his vehicle, and he runs up there, and he says, you know, y'all could have died. And I turned around, looked at him, and said, no, surely not. And that was when daddy wore me out for mocking a cop. So there you go.
Learned so many lessons in that one story.
Yeah.
We need seats that are bolted down. We need tires that are bolted onto the axle.
Yeah.
We need not to talk to cops. There's so many good things.
Yeah.
We made the state championship in ag my junior year.
Okay.
For ag mechanics was our category. And we went down to Montgomery to compete. We were so excited. Okay. Long weekend. Of course, no bus, so we had to drive ourselves. Well, right. I rode with a buddy of mine named Daniel, and he always had a jacked-up, square-body Ford, single cab, big old 36s or whatever on there. Well, I rode with him.
Yeah.
And we rode down there, we competed, and we were on the way back, and he, you know how we were in teenagers, radio turned up as loud as it could go, and we're bouncing down up 65 north at Pelham. And we were going down through there, and everything was just as good as it could be. Without a warning, without any indication that anything was wrong, the front right of that Ford hit the ground. And a jacked up truck is bad enough,
right,
but you can imagine how it tilted. And so the brake drum is turned into the wheel, and here goes that big mud tire, and it's just bouncing. It's staying with us like a dog chasing a car going down the road. And he is trying, he gets control of it, unlike y'all spinning around in circles. And we're right there at the ramp. So Daniel veers slow and it turns, and we're going down the ramp, and the whole time there's Spot just running right beside us. Daniel gets on the brakes. He gets us stopped. Well, that wheel no longer is tethered to any brakes. It's just continuing to bounce. And that ramp goes down at Pelham. And I'm watching it go down the emergency lane of the off ramp. And then I look up, and it's headed towards a whole stopped line of traffic. And I'm thinking, there is no way that this is going to end well. It's bouncing. It's picking up speed going down that hill. And it's headed right towards a brand new Mercedes E-Class or M-Class, whatever they are. I can't afford them. I don't
know.
That's
right.
And I look at Daniel. I said, this is going to be horrible. And right when it gets down to where it flattens out and it's fixing ahead across the road, you know how navigation signs are? And there's a two-post galvanized post sign that says Birmingham that away. From the side, those posts and that sign is no more than probably an inch in width. That big mud tire centered that inch of width and fell harmlessly right there at the ground. Oh, and I looked at him. He's sitting there looking at me, just sweat rolling down his eye. And I said, never, ever could that happen again. And we got to laughing after that and had a big time, you know, thinking about it, but went down there, got the tire, got it back on, and on to the house we went.
That's funny.
Yes.
Brandon, you got another one for us.
Yeah, so growing up, we fished every day. Mm-hmm. That's a thing.
It's that time of year.
It's that time of year, as it was. So as a kid, we had a pond about a quarter mile from our house that we had permission to fish, and it was full of those big bluegill. And that was an everyday ritual. So, you know, if you're a kid and you've ever been told, no, you can't go fishing, that's the world's coming to an end. Right. I don't know if it felt like that does to me back then. Mm-hmm. The word no and fish in the same sentence was not supposed to happen. So Dad's got to work later that afternoon, so we're hanging at my grandparents' house. So, Pawpaw, and you're starting to beg, and you're pleading, and you're willing to do whatever it takes. I'm willing to do anything if you'll just take me fishing. Not today. So I was like, something's got to give. So I'm looking for a way to go fishing. Doesn't matter what it is. I go to my brother. We're in the 10 to 12 year range, something like that. Maybe younger, probably younger than that. Maybe 8, 10, whatever. So I go down to him. I said, so when my grandparents gardened, and any waste that was left over, there was a ditch that he had that they throwed all scrap, anything in. So you know what eats in that. You got a mouse, you got a rat, you got bird, just all stuff. So the brain gets to working. We're going fishing, some form, way, or fashion. Well, we're sitting there, and I'd seen a few mice I seen run across there. So I go digging in the basement. I go down to the cellar. They had the old-timey cellar. So I go down there, and I'm looking around. There's brim hooks I had never seen before that are miniature to catch a minnow on and go in a minnow's mouth. Mama had cheese on the kitchen table every afternoon after supper. I looked at my brother. I was like, we're going fishing. What are you talking about? I said, when Papa ain't looking, go to the shop, get us about 30 foot of line, and we're going to make us some lines and hang them from the yellowbell bush out there so they'll bounce. So in that process, I look at my brother. They're not looking. We put that cheese on this stuff, and he's like, what are you going to do with this? So we take it over, and we lay it around the scrap on the side of the concrete wall, tie it to the yellowbell bush. We go hide. Grandparents sitting on the front porch, and I look out there, and the yellowbell bush is starting to dance. I said, he looked at me and said, it worked. I said, go get it, go get it. So we grab it. It's a gopher. It's not just your typical little film. It's a gopher like yay long. And we're pulling this thing. I don't know if you ever had a gopher hook with a fishing, with a hook. They scream. It sounds like a baby screaming because it's got that hook and it's going ballistic. And they fight as good as any fish you ever caught. And we're dragging this thing out, and it's in the concrete, and we're fighting it, and we finally get it out. When I look back, I look up on the porch, and there's my granddad, my mama, sisters, his sister, my great-granddaddy, and people that they've waved to come over there and kept silent to not say a word. And they're on the front porch looking down 20 foot at us, and there's a whole group of people sitting up there, and they left us alone for like 10 minutes. And I had laid gopher rats, 5 gopher rats down the wall that we had taken out with that one little fish hook and Mama's cheese. And needless to say, I got in trouble because I got the cheese off the table. It was the only thing I got in trouble for, because I went in and got food off the table to feed a rat.
Even though y'all provided all that entertainment.
All that entertainment.
Still got in trouble.
Still got in trouble.
Yeah, it was the best trouble I ever got into in my life. I will do it today. I mean, I told that story several different times, different people, and they're like, you caught a rat. I was like, you had to fish every day. I don't know if you know how a drug addict is, but they got to have their fix. And me and my brother had to have our fix every day. And it had to be something on the end of a line to catch something. And we decided we'd catch a rat.
You know what's preventing this today from things like that? Which I don't know. That might have some serial killer tendencies.
Yeah.
Yeah. You ain't got a twitch feed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
But social media and electronics has taken those adventures out.
That's
the
true.
Reason y'all did that, you had nothing else to do.
So I take Kyson and my daughter and take her on those kind of adventures. We've not took that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but
you
didn't repeat that, did you? No.
Okay.
We haven't repeated the rat one. We don't have none. Maybe if we had a few around the house like that, I would probably do that, you know? Because growing up, I heard people talk about catching turkeys on corn. Mm-hmm. Trot lining,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I thought, nah, that's something to go to jail over.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna try to, spend my life here on earth out of that place. I'm gonna try to, remember years the good Lord gives me, I'm gonna try to make sure I do not visit that place. And hopefully my kids and we all abide by the same standards. There's a lot of things you can do, you know, so I try with my kids to give them this, what coon hunting can provide you, what the deer woods can do for you. I mean, there's enough that Mother Nature provides that, you're sleepy when you get ready, when it's time to go to bed.
It creates character too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I was in town one time and my wife and my two daughters were shopping across town. They said, hey, they called me on the phone. They said, hey, I need to tell you something or ask you something. I said, okay. So there's some gerbils over here and we want to buy a couple. And I said, them gerbils ain't nothing but overgrown rats. I don't believe we need to get them. Well, 3 against 1, guess what?
Mm.
They brought gerbils home. I may get trouble telling them. But anyway, they brought them home. And I said, and every day I walked by there, I said, man, it made me sick. Well, guess what? He named one Peter, one Wendy, male and female. Well, Peter would bite you. He'd just snap you. And they kept on. It snapped me and it snapped my wife and it snapped my daughter. Then my youngest daughter by the name of Faith, well, it snapped her. And so I'm in the living room, and I'm watching TV, watching news, and all at once I heard something, ow, that hurt. And I'm like, okay. She, Peter finally got her. I want to hear the toilet flush. So she come in there, and I said, what did you do? She said, come here, I'll show you where she was about 4. So I'll show you where Peter went. She grabbed me by the hand. She led me to the bathroom. She went to the toilet. She said, Peter down there. She flushed that joker down the toilet.
He got one shot.
And that was it. He bit everybody but her, and she's 4-year old. He's swimming with the fishes. Right.
She waterboarded him.
That's right.
Waterboarded him right to the septic tank.
In the septic tank.
When I was in kindergarten, back to the, you're talking about that mindset of figuring things out, entertaining yourself. I would always get there early because of my bus route. Just, I don't know why she showed up so early, but I would be one of the first kids there. And, you know, there'd usually be about 2 or 3 of us boys show up. And we had these building blocks, but they're the bigger ones.
Oh, yeah.
Like a big Lego.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I don't know if they still make those. And what we would do is we would fashion them together in weapons.
Yeah.
And of course you had to be creative minded as well. And we would play war, and that was pretty good for a little while. And we had these big bunk beds in there and like a huge fort. This was the best, you know, that was probably manageable until we thought about hand grenades. We could get the little blocks and be hand grenades. And then these became, you know, throw at each other and this, that, and the other. Well, I looked over and we kept a gerbil. And I'd already got my arm warmed up. I thought, you know what would be fun? I think we could throw this gerbil and see how far incrementally every time we throw it, we get a little further and get a little further and get a little further. And so we got the gerbil out of the little aquarium cage or cage that it stayed in. And we was standing about 3 feet and we'd toss it. Oh, that was good. Well, let's step back, toss it. It was good. Well, we tossed back and forth until we had gotten the full length of the room. And I had it in my position. And I said, I think that we're going to make this last throw. And I, you know, we were pitching it, underhanded. Well, this, I knew I couldn't underhand it across the room. So I reared that thing back. And right when I was about to throw it, all I heard was, Phillip! And I just slowly looked over my left-hand shoulder. And she carefully got the gerbil out of my hand and then carefully took my hand and escorted me all the way down to the principal's office. And that was my first time to go to the principal's office as a kindergartner.
That's funny.
Go ahead and tell me another one, Dan.
I got a short one. My uncle, Odell, he loved to hunt, loved to coon hunt. But the problem was Odell get lit. And he would drink some, you know, and then he'd start drinking more. And before you long, he drank too much. So I was 13 years of age, and he thought, well, I want to go with you. And I said, well, Odell, I said, you can't drink with me because I'm underage, but I drive. But anyway, so, well, he didn't tell me that he'd slipped by and got him some moonshine. And he was he was lit. And he showed up. I said, I ain't going with you. I ain't going. He said, come on now, come on. I said, I ain't going. Mama said, go with him. So I had to go. So I had my dog. We went hunting. And they treed over in the bottom. He'd run about 30 minutes and treed in the bottom in a snag about 4 foot tall, maybe 4.5. You know what a snag is? Hollow. Well, the dog's treeing. He know the coon's there, but he don't know to look over in there. I get there, and I said, no, Odell, you stand here. I said, I'll shine over in the top and look in there. Well, when I did, I shine peeked. There he was. I said, hand me my .22. He said, no, we don't need to do that. I said, I'll catch you. I said, Odell, you don't want to catch that? He said, no, I'll catch him. I said, okay, you catch it. He goes over there and reach over and grabs it. And he turns around and I got my light shining him. He said, look, ain't no problem. By that time, that thing spun around him. And he grabbed his arm and he seemed like somebody had their arm on fire. Well, his arm was on fire. Fangs, toenails, and everything was digging in my uncle's arm. And he was just screaming and I wasn't helping him. I was sitting back. This is one way to sober you up. And I sat there and watched him, and I kept my dog leased up like it's right here. And I just watched him. Finally, I reached over and I snapped old Blue, and she went and grabbed the coon. It still latched to his arm and snatched it off. And I mean, it ripped him off, and the coon took off, went down the hill. And he said, I got to go to the doctor. I got to go to the doctor. I got to go to the doctor. I said, no, we're going to get that coon. We hole down there in the ground. So we turned around, and I said, well, let's go to the doctor. And so we just headed up. And so I just stopped by and tell my mom, said, hey, Odell, you know, got bit tonight. Bit, and said, yeah, coon got him. She said, why'd you let the coon get him? I said, I'm 13 years of age. And I got a whipping for that too, for letting me get, and he was, I mean, they went to the, he had to get a rabies shot, sewed up, stitched up. But that's the last time he went coon hunting with me. He never did want to go with me anymore. Never did ever want to.
That's a nightmare.
Oh, it's like
I don't know if they make enough moonshine for me to grow a raccoon.
He's crazy. He'd do anything.
Pound for pound, probably the meanest.
That or Wolverine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're little grizzly bears.
That's what we call them. Gosh. I say, when we get to a tree, a lot of times they'll be like, that's a little bear. It'll be the size of them. You know, like a bear cub sitting up there, and it's like, that'll whoop a dog in 2 minutes if it comes down.
I think we've got time for one more coon hunting story. We've told a couple of them, but you said you got one more exciting one.
Yeah, one of my friends up in Sullivan, Alabama, named David, we went coon hunting one night, and I had my dog named Blue, and he had his dog named Joe. And we done treed 3 coons, and the water was out, like you said a while ago, and we were coming back in his old Toyota pickup, and the water was across the road. Well, we eased off in the water because he had 4-wheel drive. and we was going, then all at once we noticed there was a Buick Regal sitting there, and we couldn't get around it. So I looked at Dave and going, what are we going to do? Finally, this guy staggers out of the car, and he's pretty well lit, you know, and he comes up, always a coon in the store, somebody lit. But anyway, he comes up, and he said, man, we're stuck. We can't get by. And I said, oh, and Dave said, well, we'll hook you up, and we'll back up and pull you out. So I reached back and grabbed the chain, and I handed it. He said, well, crawl on. I said, I'm not crawling underneath your truck and all that water to hook you up. You're going to do that. So I handed it to him. He hooked it up, and then David hooked to his truck. We put it in reverse. We get him on dry land. We didn't realize there was somebody in the passenger seat. It was a woman. So anyway, I'm at the front of the truck, and she crawls out of that Buick Regal, and she's half-dressed and half-not-dressed. And she comes up, and she says, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you. And she just kept on, and she grabbed me, and I had that night light on. Was a Cajun light, and she was hugging me, trying to kiss me, and I was sliding up the hood of that truck, trying to get away from her. And old David's over there, and he's over unhooking that chain. He was doing like this right here. And she reached over, grabbed him, and all I could see was that little light in the air spinning like that. She was giving him sugar, too. He gets the truck, and we're like two people that had been taken advantage of. We sat there. We didn't say a word. We didn't look at each other. We didn't smile. It was one of them crying games. You know what I'm talking about? We're just sitting there like this. I said, stop his truck. And he said, why? And I get out, and I crawl out in front of that truck, and there's a mud holer, and I'm washing my face. He said, what are you doing? I said, they don't tell him what that woman's got. And I said, but I'm getting it off. He got there, and he's washing his face too. And then he looked at him. He said, what did you do? Don't tell my wife.
Oh.
And I said, guess what? I'm going to. And I said, well, I'm going to tell yours. I said, tell her. I don't care. Well, guess what? I told her she was madder than a hatter. But that's a lesson for all of us. When you're coon hunting, you never know. You never know what you're going to see. And we always called her the wild woman in the bottom.
Wild woman in the bottom.
Yep, sure did. I can coon hunt, I can deer hunt, and I can squirrel hunt. But the most scariest time I ever had was when my daughter, when she got about 4, maybe 3 years of age, my wife said, hey, I want you to watch her, and I'm leaving to go to town. I ain't scared of nothing, but I'm scared of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there by myself with that little bitty 3-4-year-old girl, and I'm just laying, I hope she stays asleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing everything to be everybody be quiet, everybody shut up. Nobody's there. Dog, y'all hush. I got coon dogs, I got rabbit dogs, I got everything. And all at once, old Blue opened up and she raises up. I was like, oh gosh. I looked at her and I said, oh, what are we going to do? She starts crying. So I get her everything I think of to make her happy. Nothing made her happy. Finally, she said, let's play tea. I said, okay. So, you know, if you have the daughters, you know, they have them little Barbie table and two chairs are about this tall, you know. I look like an elephant on a tricycle sitting on it. And she said, so she got all the tea stuff there and she would go and she'd use water. She'd bring it to me and I would, choo, and I mean, she'd bring, choo, she'd go get more, choo, and I'd just chunk in it. And I'm about to die full of water. Finally, I hear somebody pull up. It's my wife, and I'm like, oh, thank God. So I go to the door, and I open the door, I said, look, she's doing good. She said, well, you did good. You did real good. And I said, yeah, I did good. Well, how'd you keep her quiet? I said, we played tea. She said, well, where'd you get the tea? I said, we didn't use tea. I said, well, what'd you use? I said, water. She said, where'd you get the water? I said, Jessica, where'd you get the water? She took me to the toilet. She'd been dipping down the toilet.
Oh, boy.
So then I went outside and I tried to puke and chew gum and mints and everything else to clean my mouth out. You know what I mean?
I do.
So that's a story. You never, never trust a girl that's 3 or 4 year old. And but she sure gave me a bunch of toilet water and I drank every bit of it.
Now I got one question to follow that up. Are you a household that goes by the mantra, if it's yellow, let it mellow?
Most of them, yeah.
I hope you're not, because that is...
That's funny.
Oh, man. We're not that family.
No.
We're not. But we are a family of God's Word. All right, fellas, let's remove our hats and turn to God's Word. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25 and 26. For husbands, this means love your wives just as Christ loved the church. He gave up his life for her to make her holy and clean, washed by the cleansing of God's word. Now, you just told us a story about your wife.
Yeah.
And she put you in a little tight bit of a situation, a little tight spot there. But you did it. And you know, she got to go shop or whatever it was that she needed to do. And I think as husbands, we'll all agree, it's not always easy to do everything that our wife needs us to do. It's not always easy to get along. We're two different people trying to be one. Mm-hmm. And the Bible didn't say, God's word doesn't say that, hey, get married to your wife and it will always be butterflies and rainbows and it's going to be easy for y'all to love one another. It doesn't say that. But it does say that husbands should love their wives as Christ loved the church. So here's what I want to say out you fellas today. If maybe you're having a hard time showing this kind of love, the love that Jesus showed us to your wife, I want you to remember something. We are broken, fallen, sinful people towards God.
Yes, sir.
Blaspheming, all these things. We don't seek him. We don't seek his will oftentimes. And even though that was true, he still loved us enough to come to earth, to live a perfect life, fulfill what we couldn't fulfill, and die for us. And that's the type of love that we're called to love our wives with. So if you have a wife, and there's all kinds of people, and I'm not saying that every wife's easy to get along with. I'm thankful that God gave me a wife that puts up with me and is very easy to get along with. But if you're having trouble honoring God by honoring your wife, think about what Christ did for you. And I think that will help motivate in times when it's even difficult, because I didn't deserve it. I didn't deserve Jesus to love me. I didn't deserve for Jesus to die for me. But now that I have believed and confessed in him, and I'm a recipient of his grace and his mercy and his salvation, I want to honor him. And this is one way that we can honor God.
Amen.
It's by loving our wives. Y'all agree?
I agree.
Yes, sir.
Not always easy.
Not always
easy. But what we're called to do.
Yep.
Well, let's play the word game, and then we're going to do the 60-second story game. Brandon, I think you should start us off with the word game.
Think.
We.
Should.
Carry.
A.
Gun.
Hunting.
Because. Tucson. Oh, he lost.
It left. There was nothing.
There were so many reasons for us to do that, though. Oh, man, I love the word game. It'll get you.
Every time. Oh. It gets me. I ain't a risk for somebody who's done it. So.
And it may be that seat. Because Shane is usually...
So I was going to ask that. So when I'm watching the show, it's like, it goes, and it seems to maybe go 2-3 rounds, and it gets over here, and it's just like, there's nothing...
It's the doldrums.
Yeah,
it's
over.
That's the doldrums of the word game.
Or Phillip's just beyond smart at this. No. He knows the perfect word to throw out there to shut Shane down. Yeah. I think that's what it is.
Maybe I got a good curveball.
You got a curveball there. You got him. You get him.
Well, speaking of curveball, that's what we're going to do for the 60-second story game. Most exciting time around baseball. Most exciting time around baseball. Who wants to go first?
I'll take it. Brandon, so,
You got to get us a timer going. So set us up 60 seconds. And I'll go second. Daniel, you can go last.
All right. Sounds good.
So when I was eight or nine years old, first year of kid pitch, park league, you know, we're getting there, and we'd had a really good season. Everything was going good, and you just didn't get a lot of balls hit to you at second base, it seemed like, back then. And I played second base, you know, all the time. And I remember sitting there going to the game, it kind of like an on, and we need one more run, and we get that run. We're home team. So we're sitting there, and, you know, that ball was hit. It was kind of up the middle. An 8-9-year-old kid go over there, the ball went in my glove. Should have never went in the glove. Turn, throw, it's react, kid catch it, win the ball game. Straight to Dairy Queen in Hueytown, and we're eating ice cream. You know, that was the winning catch. And I sit over going, no.
That's always an exciting time.
You're watching your kids now do it, and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
You know?
Man, There's so many cool things that happen. Baseball's a fun sport.
Baseball brings a lot of people together. It's like it hunting. Does.
Yeah.
Get him set up. Daniel, you ready?
Yeah, more or less. Well, I played Little League baseball, and I was okay. I played, you know, third, short, second, and played first. And my daddy was old school. You didn't miss games no matter what. You just didn't miss a game. I don't care if you had a broken arm, you was playing. It's the way it was. Well, one time I got a stomach virus, and I mean, I was sick. Oh, I was so sick. And I told my dad, I said, Dad, I can't go today. You going, son. You going to go play. I said, I just can't go. He said, Daddy, I got the back door trots. I just can't go. He said, you going. So I went in there in the bathroom, and before I put my uniform on, I packed my pants full of toilet paper. I looked like a 12-year-old with a diaper on, running down through there. Was it then getting close to the end of the game, I hit the ball, and it went up between short and third. So I turned first base, and I mean, I'm full, and then I felt it. I said, oh, Lord, please don't let this happen. Please, right here in front of this whole crowd. It's a big...
Finish it out.
Well, I didn't make a second, and it let go. My white pants were not white no more. They were brown, so there you go. And my daddy said, I should have let you play. I said, well, yeah.
Yeah. It took this for you to realize it.
He thought I was messing with, but I love baseball. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's an exciting day on playing baseball.
It was exciting. It's hard to run when you're squeezing everything so tight you can barely move your legs.
Oh, man. Well, Daniel Brandon, it's been a fun time today telling stories with you guys. Now, I want to, before we go, I think you got a little something to show everybody.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I got here, I didn't know if you wanted to know. I'm an author, okay? I tell people it's really good reading a very expensive toilet paper. But you can buy it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, all over the world. You can buy it in Spanish, whatever. It's a story, if you got a chance. It's about a family living in hard times in Alabama. And they got two little boys. One of them's named Danny. One of them's named Cannon. And they make a living in a strange way by using dogs and coon hunting.
What's the title of it?
Queen and Her Trouble.
All right.
By Daniel Heath Yielding.
Well, we'll put up a link on Amazon so that they can check that out.
Yeah.
Y'all make sure y'all get y'all a copy of Queen and Her Trouble from the author himself right here, Daniel.
That's me.
Well, I appreciate your time. Appreciate y'all making a commitment to be here today. But that's going to do it this week of the Hating Outbound Podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Daniel.
We'll see you guys next week.